Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Carl Landry Record Club right here.
Strong intro. Strong.
Yes. Music podcast from the rights of Ricky Sanchez. That's Mootloo. I'm Spike. How are you, brother?
Pretty good. Pretty good. How about you, man?
Good. By the time this comes out, I assume you will be out on the road. You're doing some tour dates, right, with Amos, and then you're doing some solo stuff as well?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And I'll be talking about it more in the coming weeks. A little preview, a bunch of tour dates coming up in the spring and summer, a handful of dates with our pal, Amos, and then a bunch of headlining dates of my own as well. So going to be in a bunch of cities, man. Chicago, Detroit, a lot in the Midwest. With Amos, we're doing like Chicago, Indy, St. Louis, Kansas City. I'm playing Detroit, Cleveland, Atlanta, Boston, a whole bunch of places. So
personally, I think Amos should be opening for you, but So we are to meet. Amos has a new album coming out as well this summer.
Yeah, exciting. Transmissions.
It's a little disappointing hearing it. Well, I don't think I know which songs made the album, and I don't know which order they're in. So it'll be exciting to hear that. It's a little like being on the, like getting to hear it first is cool, but then a little bit of the excitement of when it comes out goes away.
More if you're just like, it's fresh when it's just out. You know?
Yeah.
Otherwise. Does it, you know how they say like sometimes if you see how the sausage is made, it's not quite the same thing? You know?
Yep. And when you find out that, No, I don't know.
I knew your mind was going somewhere once I said that.
Yep. So we're a music appreciation.
I could see the light bulb went off for a second.
Yep. We love music here. This is not a music review podcast. It's appreciation. We do two albums every pod, and usually we try to sneak in a new single every pod. Idea is to listen to something that you love and find out what we like about it, and then you to hear us talk about an album that one of us loves, and we tell you about it, just like the good old days of music discovery, just somebody telling you something was good. It's the best. So we have two albums today, as I mentioned, and a new song. Listener album is Powerglide from the New Riders of the Purple Sage, released in 1971. Comes from Sam. Says, not sure if this album is too old, but it's so random and good. I'm not even a deadhead, but this album gets me feeling some type of way. My girlfriend's wacky-ass chiefing dad bought it at a Denver store and didn't want to fly back with it, so he gave it to me. This was over 2 years ago, and I still listen to this album once a week. Super quick and fun listen. Hope you all enjoy. Thanks for the pod. And by the way, that is random music discovery right there. Your girlfriend's dad buys an album, doesn't want to take it on the plane, so you just take it and you're like, "Yeah, I'll give it a try."
Yeah,
and you end
not?
Up loving it.
Yeah. And not even a dead fan.
Yeah, I don't even actually, to be quite honest with you, I've never heard of this group, so I don't even know what the connection is of this to the Dead. Obviously, it sounds like the Dead, but I don't if there's a personnel connection, I don't know of it.
We shall explore.
We will. And it's my week, so I picked an album. I picked 1997's Welcome to Our World from Timbaland and Magoo. And an album that, by the way, was not on streaming services for a really long time. I never read what the issue was, but there was a group of albums from this era, Aaliyah stuff as well, that the streaming services didn't have the rights to. So you would have to listen to, you know, the bootlegged versions on YouTube or something, or God forbid you have a physical copy of it or something. I should get a CD player. Maybe I don't like vinyl, but I do like CDs. Maybe I'll get a cool CD player or something and start collecting CDs again. But
do you think that'll have just as vinyl came back around and had a surge, you think CDs are going to have a...
They did in 23. In 22, there was increased CD sales for the first time in over 20 years, that CD sales actually went up year over year. I think... I would imagine artists trying to push physical, you know, stuff on their own probably has a connection to that. Also, I think, you know, vinyl has gotten so expensive that the idea of buying a CD maybe for $15 when the vinyl is usually at least 30, sometimes pushing 50 sometimes, maybe that's the... And if you're an audiophile at all, I think that the the what's it called? The quality on a CD is probably unmatched, I would say, compared to any other platform, right? I mean, it's obviously better than cassette. It's better than vinyl. It's better than digital because it's not compressed. You know, usually when you're listening to streaming, you're listening to a compressed version of it, but the one on the CD is usually the entire WAV file. So you hear everything.
Yeah, in a sense, now with streaming, there's a whole era of listening to music at generally a lower quality than we had been, you know, before streaming took hold. But I think with CDs, the other thing is the convenience of it. You know, you pack some, if it's going to be a tactile thing, it's going to be a physical entity.
Yep.
You just you can pack a handful. And vinyl is a little more of a, I love vinyl, but it's a little more of a task to bring it around. You can't leave it in the heat. You got to be very, it's very temperamental, you know.
I just think even I just don't like the process of listening to the vinyl and getting up every, you know, I like the idea that I can't skip over anything. I think that's cool. But the idea that I have to get up after four songs and flip it over is just like, it sort of defeats a little bit of the purpose for me in that I just sort of want to lose myself in what I'm doing. I don't want it to stop at any point, I think. Like, I like the charm of the sound of vinyl, I think, but the actual utility of it, I don't love it, you know?
Yeah, that's the one upside for me is that analog sound. There's that warmth.
Yes.
That you don't hear in any other digital context. But yeah, the task of, yeah, if you want to be distracted or not worry about it too much, having to stop, flip it over again, yeah, it's not as convenient.
I own a bunch of vinyl because I started trying to support the artists that I like by buying the vinyl. And then I was like, you know what? I will buy a t-shirt. The margins are probably just as good on the t-shirt as they are on the vinyl. So I'll stream the music and buy the t-shirt.
Those are definitely the money makers on tour.
Yeah.
Vinyl too, but really t-shirts because you're only going to move a limited amount of vinyl.
Right. I'm not going to buy more than one copy of unless I'm a Taylor Swift fan, I'm not going to buy more than one copy of one album from the artist I like, but I might have, I'm wearing an August Burns Red t-shirt. I've probably 9 August Burns Red t-shirts, you know, that I'll buy, but I'll only buy one copy of the album. And to be honest with you, like there's sort of, unless you really, really like the physical media, you're really just sort of expressing your support for the artist by buying it. If you do have a streaming service, there isn't a ton of utility in the physical copy unless you personally like owning it. So there's a part of it to me that almost feels like GoFundMe-ish to the artist, you know, like I would rather buy something. I will feel more fulfilled if I buy something that I'm actually going to use than if I don't, you know.
Yeah, and a shirt is, there's a utility to that you can't beat. And also, the other thing about it is for the artist, it is the walking billboard thing.
Yes.
You know, that's a real thing. Building a brand, if you move enough shirts, it actually, whether you consciously think of it that way, it becomes part of the marketing branding push.
Absolutely. There are plenty of, especially in rock and metal, there are plenty of bands I've discovered because I saw them on a t-shirt at some point. You know, I talked to JB from August Burns Red about that, who I think does a lot of their merch in that he directs the design of it, but it's super important in a lot of different, you know, in a lot of different genres. I think gear is, you know, t-shirts, hats, all that kind of stuff.
That's a great shirt, by the way.
August Burns Red, as far as merch, like they are 10 out of 10. Like they do merch really, really well. I'm jealous of how well they do merch. So, and then our new song comes from Mootloo. He picked it. It is The Smile and it is called Friend of a Friend. We never start with a new song. And I think we should start with a new song. We go new song, then my album, then listener album. Does that work?
That sounds great. Excellent. I'm worn out spaces. So The Smile, were you familiar with The Smile?
So I wasn't, and then I listened to it and I was like, this sounds like Thom Yorke. And then I was like, sounds like a Thom Yorke ripoff. So I just did a quick Google. I didn't read anything, but I did a quick Google. I was like, oh, sounds like Thom Yorke because it is Thom Yorke.
It is Thom Yorke.
Yep.
I had heard about this band a couple of years ago when they first emerged, but I guess I didn't pay it much mind because it seemed to me, maybe my perception of it was that it was just maybe a one-off project, something that was going to have any staying power. But I was wrong about that because this is a legitimate working unit. They are now 2 records in. They've been touring all over. So it's not just a low-key side project. It seems to be a legitimate, you know, music entity in and of itself. So give a little backdrop on it. The Smile is a trio formed in 2020, and it consists of Tom York of Radiohead on vocals, bass, guitar, keyboards, and piano. Johnny Greenwood, also of Radiohead, on guitar, bass, keyboards, piano, and harp. And Tom Skinner on drums, percussion, keyboards, and backing vocals. They also have one additional touring member, a musician named Robert Stillman, who plays saxophone. Now, there were many different groups and collaborations that emerged out of the pandemic. You know, it was an interesting time because the touring was shut down for a while. So that was the very difficult side of it. For a lot of musicians, it kind of hurt the livelihood. But it also opened some doors for people to try some things maybe that they had been planning on doing and couldn't get around to doing. And so there were some different projects that were born out of the pandemic, and this is one of them. They started putting this band together during the COVID-19 lockdowns and then made a very surprise debut in May of 2021 through the Glastonbury Festival, streamed a live performance of theirs. It wasn't actually a live show, but Glastonbury Festival kind of introduced this band to the world on a live stream. By early 22, they started releasing singles. They released six singles in the first half of that year. They played their first shows for live audiences in London. And then eventually, in May of 22, they released their debut, an album called A Light for Attracting Attention. This was produced by Nigel Godrich, who has been a longtime Radiohead collaborator, worked a lot with Tom York. He's pretty much been their producer all along. I don't think he did the first one. Is that correct? But I think he did everything from the Bends on.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, actually.
One other thing about Nigel Godrich, in my opinion, he produced the best Latter-day Paul McCartney record. Are you familiar with that, with Chaos and Creation in the Backyard?
Do you know I've never listened to a Paul McCartney record, the solo Paul McCartney record?
You've never listened to wait a minute.
No, I've heard songs, I'm sure, but I've never...
You never listened to Ram or Band on the Run or...
I know Band on the Run. Like, I know the song, but because I'm a human, you know.
Right,
but,
there's no way you can avoid it.
Yeah, but I've never listened. Truth be told, this is maybe an entire different podcast, but I didn't really, like, dive into the Beatles until probably 2 or 3 years ago. And
2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, I just never had any interest. I've said before, I have very little interest in music that came out before when I started listening to music. So the only stuff that I became familiar with mostly was the stuff that had to play on the radio. And that was mostly hard classic rock, as they describe it. So sort of like the Zeppelins, Pink Floyd, Ozzy, you know, Black Sabbath, yada, yada, yada. I never listened to the Beatles. So the only Beatles I knew were the Beatles that were, you know, popular enough for me to just know in passing. So it wasn't until it went on streaming and I was like, I want to see if I like the Beatles or not. And I actually ended up falling in love with the White Album in particular.
That's an incredible album.
Yeah. And then Sgt. Pepper I liked a lot, but I liked the White Album way, way more than Sgt. Pepper. And then Revolver, that's a Beatles album, right? I enjoyed that one as well.
Yeah. Those are kind of the mid to later era Beatles.
Yeah.
So Paul McCartney's had a prolific solo career as well.
Yes, of course.
But, you know, the Beatles were ultimately this extraordinary phenomenon, whole greater than the sum of the parts. So in a sense, whether it was McCartney or Lennon or Harrison, even Ringo Starr, they were always kind of competing with the Beatles in a sense. So, but McCartney has an impressive body work on his own. And in my opinion, maybe we'll do this one at some point. There's a record he made, I guess, almost 20 years ago that Nigel Godrich produced that is just phenomenal.
Cool.
And apparently the story goes that, you know, they had this very contentious relationship because Nigel Godrich was actually trying to, you know, challenge him and push him in a way that maybe no one else had and yielded. Sometimes that works, you know, sometimes that tense dynamic can work. So anyway, long tangent there. But The Smile released this album in May of 2022. And then throughout 2022 and 23, they toured quite extensively in Europe and North America. And I wasn't even aware of that. Were you?
No, it's so weird. You would think that Tom York having like a different band with somebody from Radiohead would be big enough where it would sort of enter my world at some point, but I've never heard of this. And I would imagine if they toured, they would play Madison Square Garden in New York or something. Like, there's no way that this wouldn't be a big deal. But I think it's like Radiohead made this conscious decision in Rainbows, which was the they released online was like one of the first online only releases that they just, I think like they delved off into their own path for their specific fans, and that's about it. And there's obviously a lot of them, but they don't hit critical mass to me really ever. Thom Yorke doesn't, I guess.
Yeah, maybe they haven't in recent years. And I think the version of Radiohead that has, that people know, is still ultimately Ben's OK Computer,
yep,
Kid A era. But you're right. They've gone into, they've almost become niche by choice.
Yes, giant niche, obviously, but niche nonetheless, you know.
Yeah, and that's why it's interesting to hear a project like this, because, so the way I kind of jumped into this was a few weeks ago, I was scrolling through Instagram, and KEXP is a great radio station in Seattle.
Yep.
And legendary station. And they do these great live and studio performances. They've had so many artists on there. I was sort of just going through my feed, and I see this clip of, it's like, oh, wait, that's Thom Yorke. That's not Radiohead, though. And it was this trio, and there was just a different energy to it. This is strange to say, but I was watching this clip and thinking, oh, he looks like he's having more fun than he normally does in Radiohead. He was kind of cutting loose and dancing. The way he was playing guitar was different. I was like, this is interesting. And it especially live in studio, just the three of them. So it was a raw, kind of more lo-fi kind of sound, I would say, than Radiohead. So I got into that. I started listening to some of these tracks. And I actually, in some ways, this resonates with me more than some of the latter day Radiohead that I've heard.
Yeah. I mean, this song, I didn't listen to the rest of the album, but this song in particular definitely seems more like you can feel the bends in this.
Yes.
In that it's got a singer-songwritery kind of vibe to it. Not that that's all the Benz was, but even sonically, there's like less bloops and blurps and bleeps on this song than there are in a lot of latter.
What was that? Blips and bloops?
Bloops,
and
blurps, and bleeps. It was
blips,
like...
Blips, that's hard to say, actually. Yeah, blips, blurps, and bleeps?
Yeah, right after OK Computer, that Radiohead decided that they were going to make a soundtrack to video games, mostly. Like Super Mario 6, Super Mario 7, Super Mario 8. But this feels like songs to me, you know?
I guess maybe that's why I like it so much, is it does... It's not fully there, but it feels closer to that, my favorite era of Radiohead. I love the Benz. That's just one of my favorite albums. And
yeah,
it's cool to hear him go back into that direction in a very different setting. So they toured quite extensively for a couple of years and actually released two different live EPs. They released A Smile Live at Montreux Jazz Festival, July 2022, and another live EP, Europe Live Recordings 2022. The new record, Wall of Eyes, just dropped a couple months ago, January of this year, this time produced by Sam Petz Davies. And this single, Friend of a Friend, was the final single they released also in January, right before the album came out. And I listened to a number of tunes and I had a hard time picking, but I kind of settled in on this mainly because it was one of my favorites that I heard and it was the most recent. And it's on this record, which is, I started listening to, is definitely a worthwhile listen. But just to get into this song a little bit, now, right away, there are some unmistakable elements of Radiohead. First and foremost, Thom Yorke. He's one of those singers. You can't mistake him for anyone else. I mean,
no, he definitely has a signature voice and sound and approach to vocals.
Yeah, he's one of those things. Within 5 seconds, you know it's him.
Yeah.
There's also a compositional element to this song that I recognize from Radiohead, but I think it's all in a very different sonic context, in a very different musical context, even down more specifically, I'll say, to how Thom Yorke's voice sounds, the way it's mixed, the general texture around his voice. There's almost at times a different attack to how he sings. And then I think the way it was recorded and mixed is more appealing to me than some things I've heard in latter day Radiohead. There's an incredible dynamic range in this song. From just this, you know, voice piano to then this vast orchestral thing, and then it pulls back to that. As a matter of fact, that happens a number of times throughout the song, but towards the end in particular, there's this relentlessly ascending orchestral piece. It goes and goes. You wonder when it's going to hit its breaking point, and sure enough, it does, and it resolves to Thom Yorke's voice and piano. And that also is reminiscent of some Radiohead moments, but again, it doesn't, it just feels like it's in a different place musically. There's a different intention behind it. Maybe it's what you said, the what is it, the blips, blurps, and bleeps?
The blips, blurps, and bleeps, you know.
There's something to it. That could be a band name, I think.
I think it could be, yeah.
What would it be? It would have to be like... Well, lo-fi indie techno pop.
Either that or completely sarcastic, a band with no blips, blurps, and bleeps, just using normal analog instruments.
It's a folk
group.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Food for thought.
Yep.
So there's a dynamic to this arrangement. As is the case with most Radiohead songs, it's not linear. I think they have been musical masterminds when it comes to nonlinear arrangements. But again, part of what I like so much about the Bends was that it was closer to classic pop songwriting. And this is still closer to that. Also, when you hear this, you hear elements of late 60s, I would say, psychedelic era Beatles. I hear some connection there. Which, yeah, again, if I think about Radiohead, I don't recall hearing that influence too often. I mean, is there something maybe in some of the earlier records a little bit, but...
Yeah, it does. It's not one of the things that pops up to me. Though they did have a far better pop sensibility in the first three records than they attempted later on, you know, specifically in the Bends. It's not surprising that you like the Bends the most because it's certainly the most like song forward of anything that they've done, you know. But I don't recall ever thinking about the Beatles when I listened to them.
Yeah, so that alone sets it aside because it's not something that they evoke when you think of a Radiohead record. But here, it makes me think of some of the things that John Lennon did late 60s. Even on a little bit on the White Album, there's some element of that. I think of it as like late 60s psychedelic pop in a sense. And finally, just the lyrics. I was thinking about this. I really don't know what any Radiohead songs mean. Do you? Like, if you think about what do those songs mean?
No. And I know all of, like, I think you could say, I like the Bends and OK Computer the best. And I think you could say that I know the words to half of those records, and right. I don't have any idea what I'm talking about.
So I'm not alone in this, because I was reflecting on that.
Yeah,
and, and it's interesting because there's a dynamic of that on this song, but the lyrics are very compelling, they're visual, they're elusive, mm-hmm. and yet they're oddly, there's an immediacy to them in a strange way. Like, they stick with you. But you don't worry about almost the literal meaning behind them.
No.
And it's more like they just evoke, they connect, they make you feel something.
Oh my God,
something.
My fucking dog. I'm sorry.
What's going on?
I have no idea. There's somebody, I'm sure, just walking by the house. I want to throw him out the window right now. Why does he do this?
He's amped up. He's fired up.
Yeah, and I can't yell at him because when I yell at him, he just does it louder. So I just have to ignore it. I'm sorry. Continue.
He's chilling. He's just, you know, he's kind of letting off some steam. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But the lyrical element, this song made me think of some of the other tunes, and it almost doesn't matter that you don't know what they mean. It's just the lyrics make you feel something. They make you visualize something, or they put you in a certain place. They create a mood.
I actually think Radiohead in general, when they are at their best, are creating a mood that you feel even if you don't know any of the words. You know, I think even in late, you know, career Radiohead and their last record, which we talked about with Christine a little bit when we did that, when Moonshaped Pool. I thought that album, that's the album, right? Not the song.
I believe it was. Yeah. When was that? Do you remember? That was early on, right?
21 or maybe, yeah, something somewhere around there. But I think even on that album, they find moments where they're able to put you in a specific headspace and a vibe and a mood that you don't need to pay attention to the lyrics with, you know?
It's an interesting dynamic that you would say an iconic band like this, I don't know what any of the songs mean. It's strange, but if it makes sense when you think of their music and you think of how it communicates and what it does, but it's just odd to me. I'm not sure that I would accept that necessarily with
no,
any
from
other
anybody
band,
else.
But
yeah.
Somehow with them, I do.
I'm thinking of Fake Plastic Trees, and I'm like, nah.
What is that? I have no idea what that's.
No idea. Yep.
Fake
no
plastic
idea.
Watering can.
Yeah. Yeah,
Yesterday I woke up sucking a lemon. That first line, and what is he talking about there?
I have no idea. Yeah, but this is a cool song. It's definitely a throwback to that era. I'm definitely going to listen to the rest. After I listened to it, I was like, oh, I'm definitely going to listen to the rest of this album. You know.
And did this connect with you? Would you say more than?
Yes.
So you had the same feeling that I did. Like that, I'm more interested in this than maybe.
Yeah,
the last several Radiohead records.
Yeah, and I could understand why they don't want to do that with Radiohead because it almost feels like it's going backwards. And if he does it in a different project, it's not the band going backwards. I respect the fact that Radiohead has a specific evolution from a point A to point B. And if it just stops there, I guess I get it. It makes sense to me. You know, there's a lot of bands that, you know, that they go on so long, they don't really have that. Almost Metallica, who's a band that I love, seems like they their last three albums have been like good, and they're good moments on it, but it doesn't feel like they've gotten anywhere. It feels like they're just taking parts of things that they did before and creating an album from it. But I do sort of respect the idea that Radiohead continued to, you know, evolve in a certain way and don't want to go backwards, which I imagine is some part of not wanting to do a, you know, music like this with the Radiohead project itself.
So maybe in a sense, this project gives both Thom Yorke and Johnny Greenwood a new creative license in a way.
Yeah, like permission to go backwards or to make something that isn't, and they're doing it on their own terms, right? Like they're not creating an older Radiohead album because anybody asked them to.
Yeah, it's has those elements, but it is something fresh, and it does sound to me, or at least looking at how much music they put out, that they're going to continue doing this project and continue touring. So it's exciting in a way to see. It's almost an artist that you recognize.
Yeah,
that you're so familiar with that you maybe have a certain perception of that might actually create a new, fresh musical identity in a way. It seems like that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm excited to listen to the rest of the album. It was a good call out. I'm wild that I've never heard of it before.
Yeah, if I hadn't seen that Instagram clip, I'm not sure that I would. I was sort of just generally aware of it, but sometimes random things. You talk about that's a random thing, social media. Yep. I saw a clip. I went to the Spotify. There you go.
You want to get into Timbaland and Magoo?
Yes. All the more his baby. My dialogue on this album. It's Magoo's album featuring me, Timbaland. You know what I'm saying? This beat so ill, I can't even rap over. Maybe Magoo can rap over, but I ain't gonna let him rap over.
Let's do it. Welcome to our world. Have you listened to this album before?
I was familiar with a few tracks on it, okay, but I never listened to the whole record. Man,
it's so cool, isn't it?
What a great album.
Yeah, it is so cool. So Timbaland, who I'm sure you know who he is, born Tim Mosley in Norfolk, Virginia, 1972. Magoo, his early partner, who is the rapper on this that sounds a lot like Q-Tip, that's if you, when you're listening to it, is Melvin Barcliff, also from Norfolk, passed away last year in 2023, which is pretty sad. I had not heard anything of him since they did three Timbaland and Magoo albums. The last one was 2003, and I haven't heard anything since then, but this, a legendary record. And the two albums that preceded this, not preceded, right? Preceded this are fine, but is not this album. This album is truly a moment in time, and he produced a lot of things around this time in Timbaland, but like this is almost like a presentation of who he is. We've talked a lot, you know, when we did the DJ Shadow album and we did, I forget what album we did before, but we talked about producer albums, and this is certainly one of those. And he doesn't do it with a ton of featurings. You know, Missy's on this, Playa is on this, Genuine's on it a little bit, but
the Genuine track right towards the end is,
oh, it's awesome.
Man, yeah. What a great song.
So Timbaland started DJing in his early teens, went by DJ Tim or DJ Timmy Tim.
DJ Timmy Tim.
DJ Timmy Tim. Also, at one point, a little nugget I found in some article. I didn't find anything more about it. He was a dishwasher at Red Lobster, accidentally got shot in the arm by a fellow dishwasher who was like showing his gun. The bullet is still in Timbaland's armpit, I guess, the bullet is, and actually made his arm, what's it called, paralyzed for almost a year. And he ended up learning how to DJ with his left hand the entire time, which I think is, you know, is an interesting story that he had to do it that way. But I think it said 9 months or a year that he couldn't move his right arm.
That just shows you, you know, some people would have allowed something like that to derail them. And he's like, no, I'm just going to do it with my left. Because the talent is so undeniable.
Yeah.
That he's like, no, I can do this with just one
arm. I'll figure this out with one arm. So, and while he was in his teens, he joined a producer like collective called SBI, which stands for Surrounded by Idiots, which for
Pharrell Williams. That's what it stands for?
Yes.
Wow.
Pharrell Williams also in this little clique. And I would say if there's one producer that I know of, named producer, that feels like he is cut from a similar cloth to Timbaland, it's probably Pharrell Williams. Not everything he's done, but there is a it's almost impossible to describe, but there is a feel to their production that has some similarities to it.
It's hard to think of two other producers in the last, 20 years
or
longer that have had the kind of impact they've had, where we talk about singers that are immediately recognizable. I feel like that's the case with Timbaland and Pharrell.
Yeah.
You recognize there's elements of their production that is uniquely them.
I would say they are in the, I don't know where they are placed, but in the top 10 most recognizable in the hip hop R&B world in terms of production style, they are in that group toward the, and I think I would say Timbaland is toward the top in that group. So, and he actually, Timbaland also knew Missy Elliott when he was in high school. Magoo Timbaland started working together in the early 90s while Missy was in a female R&B group called Sista. So Sista gets signed to the Swing Mob, which is a sort of like collective of artists and a record label run by Devante Swing, who is a member of Jodeci. So when Sista got signed, that was when Timbaland started working with that group. So that is sort of like when his explosion, when he started working with all these artists, started working with Genuine at the time, produced his debut album, produced Aaliyah's One in a Million, which is a hugely popular album at the time, which he produced. And then also produced Super Duper Fly, Missy Elliott's debut album. And Missy and Timbaland, just like a, you know, if there are two artists who are ever meant to work together, it is those two.
Their collaboration has been so special and influential and game-changing.
Yeah.
And I just remembered something now that...
What?
A big moment in our pod was we got a kind of Twitter shout-out from Missy Elliott and then from Ice Cube as well.
Yes.
But that was a big moment in Carl history, I have to say.
I can't remember why, what about Missy Elliott we were talking about.
We did a special favorite music videos. We so tight that you get our styles tangled. Sway your do-si-do like you loco. Can we get thinking night like Coco? So-so, you wanna play with my yo-yo? I smoke my on the D-Lo.
Right. Edition. And Can't Stand the Rain was probably in that, I would imagine.
Yeah, we picked one of hers. That was a while ago. But we picked one of hers. And then when you put it out there, she ended up sharing it. And then I think because she shared it.
Then Ice Cube shared it.
And I was like, wow, it's a moment. It's a big moment for the Carl, I would say.
One of the signature things of this time, and there were a few of them, is like the era of the producer who raps on his albums, even though he's not a good rapper.
Rap/talks.
Yes. So Puff Daddy, obviously not a particularly good rapper, but put himself all over all of his songs. And Timbaland, his resume as a producer, like aside from the things we're talking about, Cry Me a River. You were my son. Timbaland, Sexy Back, Timbaland, Dirt Off Your Shoulder by Jay-Z, Timbaland, Big Pimpin', Timbaland.
Those are just Apologize. Immediately iconic beats.
Yep. Every Apologize track. By One Republic. Which actually a song that I think got me fired at one point. I think I told that story before, but so One Republic, that you know that song was obviously incredibly popular.
That was huge.
Apologize. Huge. So it was, I didn't get fired, but I got in a lot of trouble. So when that song was released, it was a One Republic song, but since they were not popular or anything, it was released as Timbaland featuring One Republic. And I was working at an alternative station and I sort of thought that we weren't playing enough poppy songs, like songs that were, so we started playing The Fray and we played Matchbox 20, like songs that that were just catchy, great songs that I thought would fit. And we started playing that song. And because it showed up on our playlist as Timbaland, one of the music program directors in our company who was assigned to start looking at what we were doing was like, what is this? I got the question back, and it all started unraveling from that point.
And what was, I mean, because it was a massive hit, so what was the sticking point then?
Like, why are you playing a rap record in, why are you playing a Timbaland record on an alternative station?
I see. I guess One Republic, in a sense, didn't
nobody
fit the
cared about
yet.
One Republic.
Yeah, no one it knew was, who that was.
Though. Yeah, it was the Timbaland thing. But anyway, his resume is pretty much, you know, unapproachable as far as a producer. But I do, his rapping of these songs is almost like, see if this makes sense to you, is almost like he knew a rap should go there. He wanted to put something as a placeholder for the real rapper, and then they just left it in there. It's sort of like the way it sounds to me. He's like, do something here like this. I don't know. It is perfect for the album, and
it just
I
works.
Love it.
I know. It's not conventional. You wouldn't say, I mean, he's a brilliant producer. You wouldn't say he's a great rapper, but it does just work.
Yes.
For whatever reason, in this context, it works.
Yep. So, you know, combines R&B, hip hop, which are two things that are combined, but just sort of in a bright, different way, and a sound that I don't think I had ever heard before. And I mentioned that it is a producer album. Well, like the first two songs are 10 minutes and almost like an introduction to the album with barely any song structure to them at all. The first two, like the first two are just sort of like a warm up almost, it seems like, for the rest of the album, which really kicks off with the third song, which is Up Jumps the Boogie, which is Missy
Elliott.
I think
that's my favorite. That's my favorite song in the whole thing. Like girls jump for tricks, don't salt the next man, keep that Lindbergh hit. Up in the cut, like barbers in haircut, I'm black with Indian, my race should be much. I cut with razor blades, play spades with unfeeness, evaluate this rap, take heed of freaking genius. Up in the
it's sky, so good, you know, it's so good. And it kicks off, it's the real sort of introduction of Magoo to the album, because he's the first one on this song. Is he the first one, or is Timbaland the first one? I think he's the first one. And it actually has some great lyrics from Timbaland, but like this as a song is just there's a lot of blurps and bleeps in this song actually compared to Radiohead, but this song is so good. The combination of Timbaland, Missy Elliott, and Magoo with the production on this song is just like, is outstanding, is all-timer.
Yeah, there are just musical elements to this. The ascending keyboard line that's really at the core of the track. That, you know, he has a way of, whether it's played or sampled, because I think he's done some combination of both, but of finding a melody within a beat that you're just not going to forget, that you're going to remember instantaneously. And that's a real skill, because it's never in the way of the vocal, and it's always very much, you know, tethered to the rhythm track. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you mentioned some of the tracks you mentioned, like, Big Pimpin' by Jay-Z. I mean, think about that beat. I can think of the melody of that beat right now. Better trust and believe him. In the cut where I keep them, till I need to work, till I need to beat it up, then it's BB, then I'm picking them up, then I play with it quick in the truck. Many chicks wanna put jigger piston cuffs, divorce them and split his bucks, just because you got good sex, I'ma break bread so you could be living it up. I pass with nothing, y'all be fronting, me give my heart to a woman, not for nothing, never happen, I'll be forever macking, hardcore to assassins, I got no passion, I got no patience. And he's got that ability to just key in on one line that is just gonna drive the thing and stay with it. And he also makes me think about something that's been a recurring subject that's come up in a number of different contexts, especially with producers, but even other, not just R&B and hip hop, but every genre. But the thing of taking those three or four or five sounds that work, but not over inundating the track with too many layers or anything. He knows how to take those three, four or five elements. And even if the elements themselves are simple, the way he puts it together is just so unmistakable and so memorable.
And it has a great combination of different things, like different samples, different instruments, but also does seem to have maybe more empty space and more room in it than almost any any hip hop producer I can think of. Like, it's almost Wu-Tang like in its spaciousness, almost, along with there being a lot of stuff in there, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. I was going to say the RZA's production has that aesthetic in a very different way.
Yes. Yeah. They don't sound like each other, but that particular aesthetic seems similar to me.
And actually Pharrell from time to time, because think about Drop It Like It's Hot, the Snoop song.
The pimps in the crib, ma. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. When the pigs try to get at you, park it like it's hot. Park it like it's hot. Park it like it's hot. And if a get an attitude, pop it like it's hot. Pop it like it's hot. Pop it like it's hot. I got the rollie on my arm and I'm pouring shine.
Yep.
Same thing. There's a lot of space. And I think that's appealing to an MC or to a singer because there's just enough musical meat on the bone that it's fully realized. But it gives a vocalist a lot of room to stretch out, a lot of room to be the focal point.
And then it goes right into what I think is the best song of the album, which is Love to Love You.
It's a sprinting like a sports car. Shanta got big lips and handlebars. Put it on Tim like a porno star. Run back the tape in the VCR.
I'm coming, baby, like the big black kahuna. I wish you would have hunt me just a little sooner.
Which is, again, oddly followed by a reprise of Love to Love You with the same hook, but a completely different song and a completely different beat, which is cool. But I think, so Love to Love You has Shanta, who is a great verse on this album, just like on this song, a killer verse. And the beat, I think, is the best on the album. And I think the hook is the best on the album. And even the way the hook is sung in that sort of spooky, almost like, love to, it's so cool, man. Like this song, I remember listening to the song in college and maybe I could listen to the song for the rest of my life on repeat and never get sick of it. We're 30 years later and I'm not sick of this song. Like, I can't get enough of this song.
And I'm trying to think of the context of this record timing wise. Mm-hmm. He was already a big name producer at this point, right? He'd already had hits, or was this kind of the beginning of it?
No, this was all this. So the Missy album, I think, was after this, like 1 year after this. This was 97. So he had already produced a Genuine album. He produced Pony, and he had already produced One in a Million, which was the Aaliyah album. And do you remember that Aaliyah song, Are You That Somebody, with the baby sample in it?
I think, yes, I do. Yeah,
it, like should. a massive, 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 massive hit.
She had a number of massive hits.
Yeah. Wait, hold on. Wait, where's the Aaliyah song?
Of course, you mentioned Pony.
This is the Aaliyah song.
Yeah.
Say what? Dirty South. Here we go. Can y'all really feel me, baby girl?
Here comes the coolest part. Hold on.
Dirty South. Dirty, dirty. Can y'all really feel me? Say what?
Uh-huh.
Dirty, dirty, dirty.
Can y'all really
feel me?
I got like, is this like fucking coolest?
What a great track.
Incredible. Yeah, and then in the chorus, he samples a baby crying. Like, which is something that I've never heard before either. But that was right around when this so it all sort of happened at once, but he had already produced a couple of big tracks by the time this album came out.
And I'm thinking of that track, it speaks to exactly what we were talking about before. Think about how much melody is in that beat.
Yep. Dun dun.
Yeah.
Dun 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 dun, dun. Yep.
It's the whole groove is a hook, which is counterintuitive sometimes, because you would think sometimes you want the track to stay out of the way of what the melody is going to do in another instrument, or even more so in the vocal. But with his thing, it's almost like the hook is so strong within the beat that the vocal is better off mirroring that.
Yes. Yeah. which is incredible. And it's just sort of like an intuition that I think he has, you know, just sort of like a gut in it. And the other song I'll mention that I love is actually the Clock Strikes remix, which I...
I'ma kill you all like like OJ. This bag and new for real, you must pay. Listen to the way my rap flow delay. His mama name him Clay, I'ma call him Clay. Back up.
Don't remember if it was on the original album or if it's just on the streaming one. Clock Strikes is a song that's, you know, in the first half of the album, but then toward the end, there's a remix of it which samples the Knight Rider theme later on and has a couple of great Magoo lines like, I'm going to kill you all like OJ, which is, by the way, like 3 years after
the OJ.
Wasn't
too far removed from everything that happened.
No, it was right there. And Back of the Bus with Rosa Parks, I think is a good line in there, but is one of the coolest beats ever. And then I think the Knight Rider thing happened again with Busta Rhymes.
Busta had it in one of his songs too.
Yeah, and I think this might have had it before the Busta Rhymes song. I think so,
because that was close. That's probably more like 2000.
2001,
2002, somewhere in there.
Yeah, so just a great tune. And there's like a bunch of other ones on this, but what a just an outstanding album.
Yeah, this is like a double album almost.
Yes.
I mean, it runs like an hour 15 minutes, but you know, you put it on and you never get disengaged from it. It's compelling all the way through. I was thinking about it. There's so many great vocal performances from the singers and the MCs on here, but you could almost peel all that away and do an instrumental version of this album and it would still be enjoyable.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the length of it. Even Love to Love You is, I think, 5.5 minutes and almost has like 1.5 minutes of just the beat on the end. And I almost don't even want that to go like stop at any point. And the featurings, Playa, who never got particularly big, but Timbaland produced their album, which was called Cheers to You, which was an awesome album as well. But I feel like they're on so many of the songs and do such a great job like on the songs that they are. Like I think they're particularly memorable, I think, in their appearances on this. You know, Smoke in the Air. Like I think they do a great thing that it features them almost not in the hook, but like in a vocal part that happens throughout the song that is almost like a hook, you know?
And then on Joy too, because that's... Yes.
Yeah.
It's between that and Up Jumps the Boogie. I think those are my two tied for first. Because here in Genuine, first I was thinking about Pony. Talk about an iconic track. Amos and his band do a phenomenal version of Pony. Have you heard them do it?
I have. Now that you mentioned it, I actually have.
They crushed that. I don't know if he's still doing it, but there's a good stretch there where that was a staple of the set. And man, like when you hear that song in a live band context like that, it pops even more. But I mean, the Timbaland production on, and then this track, Joy, it's kind of what I was talking about before. It must be so great to collaborate with him as a singer, because I know Justin Timberlake, for example, loves working with him, because there's enough there musically. There's a lot to play off, but it leaves you so much room.
Yeah.
And on this track, you get that.
I think when you think about the Justin Timberlake songs specifically, or the Aaliyah song, the production is so great and it is so memorable, but I still think that the vocalist has such a spotlight on them. And it's in a lot of ways because of the space that he creates within the song for you to fill it in. It's almost like he knows that the track is made to have a vocalist in it, like to make the vocalist the star of it while still being produced, not underproduced, you know?
Yeah, he knows there's going to be... Yeah, I wonder if he thinks of that, because he's very vocal in the way he seems to create.
Yes.
You know, I remember I saw this interview with Justin Timberlake, just a brief clip. I think it was that guy, who's the guy on Apple Music? I think it's the Australian. I'm forgetting his name now.
Oh, Zane Lowe?
Yes. I think it was an interview with him. I could be wrong, but he was talking about how when he was a kid, he heard Timbaland track. I think he heard the Missy record that first.
Okay.
And he told his mom right then and there, he's like, I'm going to work with this guy. I want to work with this guy.
Wow.
And he was talking about how the first time he got there, because he loved the tracks, loved the production, and he saw how Timbaland put it together. He's like, oh man, it's right there. It's like, it's just him. It just pours out of him. He was saying, basically, he started humming something and humming the beat, and he seems very vocal in the way he puts the track together. And it's not just him on an NPC or something. It sounds to me like he hums these melodies in his head and he thinks of the beats and it's coming from a vocal place. Another thing I'll say on top of that is when you listen to Timbaland's production, the vocal arrangements are always exceptional. You think about his work. It's maybe secondary to some of the other things he does that are memorable, but I feel like in almost every Timbaland production, when it is the kind of track that requires more of a vocal arrangement, layering harmonies, they're just perfection every time. I think that's also something that he probably puts a lot of effort into, is to that vocal background harmony arrangement thing, I think is a huge part of his production too.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great album. And that was a great, I had to drive a lot over the last couple of days. I had to drive down to Philly, backed up here, down to like a bunch of times. And I was able to listen to it straight through twice. What an amazing driving album, and a great album to listen to all the way through. I think the songs stand up on their own, a bunch of them, but as a complete work, it is a really cool piece of music.
And it's crazy to think it's like an hour and 15 minutes and you never get tired of it.
No, didn't get tired of it at all. Almost didn't want it to end.
Yeah, like at the end, you're like, oh wait, I could keep going.
I could listen to that again. Yeah, I could have done more. So now I'm trying to think. We have 10 minutes.
Are we tight on time to... Maybe this should be a shorter episode and we should punt. New Riders of the
New Riders of the Purple Rain.
Which I had to double check when you sent it to me to make sure. Because I wasn't sure. I thought maybe it was your record. You were picking this record.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well,
Because Spike just texted me two albums. Normally, you know, delineates which one is which.
So I'll normally say, hey, this one's my album. This one's the listener album. So I sent Timbaland and the, wait, what's this called again? Hold on. The New Riders of the Purple Sage. Yeah. And Mula was like, I'm guessing the Timbaland one is yours. Like,
I wasn't sure. I thought maybe, I don't know, maybe. The
Grateful Dead adjacent album from 50 years ago, believe it or not, is not mine. It's not my choice. So I want to be able to give it its proper due. So why don't we just, because we talked a lot more about the new song than we normally talk about. So why don't we just keep it at these two and then we'll do New Riders of the Purple Sage.
Sounds good. Yeah, because I don't think we would have enough time right now
to
get fully into it.
So if you want to send in your album selection, which we'll say what we're going to do and then not actually do in the podcast, please do it. Go to carlandyrecordclub.com. Do it in the Spotify player. There's the question right under the player there. You could do it or hit us up on any of our social media accounts and we'll make sure to see it. Until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Stay free, my goose.